Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Cho Minardi. And today we have a conversation with one of my favorite writers of all time, Zadie Smith.
We're very excited about this. Her new novel, The Fraud, is her first piece of historical fiction. It's set in London and Jamaica in the 1800s and explores how the sugar trade funded colonial Britain. Zadie's mom is Jamaican. Her dad was British, so it was also a bit of a personal exploration for her. The first half of the book centers around Eliza Touche, who is a widow and a housekeeper to her prolific but not particularly talented novelist cousin, the real-life William Ainsworth. And it goes on to recount this famous real-life historical trial of Roger Tichborne, a butcher claiming to be this shipwrecked aristocrat and heir to a Jamaican sugar fortune. And, you know, there were many parallels to Trumpism and American populism, but for me, I loved that this was also at the heart a novel about novelists. And Charles Dickens plays a role. It's just a real delight all around.
Yeah, no, it was such a good read, and I loved being able to read it over the summer. I mean, I've loved Zadie's work since her early novels. White Teeth, On Beauty is one of my favorites, and of course, I've just been a fan of her impeccable style. I mean, what's not to love?
What's not to love?
Zadie and her family moved back to London from New York quite recently, you know, and as someone who's lived in New York for 20 years and about to move to the UK, I really, really wanted to get her tips and just get a sense of why she fell in love with New York. And it was kind of interesting talking to her about some of all of that, right?
Absolutely. No, it was such a treat because she's on this marathon press tour. So we were excited to get a moment with her. All right, without further ado, here is Zadie.
Hey, Chioma.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Chioma.
Thank you.
Yay.
Oh my God. You just don't know what the family group chat has been like. My parents do not know nothing about fashion. And then they were like, wait a minute, we're in the Daily Mail. What's happening? And I was like, oh God.
Yeah, it's wild.
So wild.
That's incredible. Well done.
Thank you. Thank
does you. It mean you're moving home?
It's been two decades for me. So
have you
I don't
got four
know
to £6 million. Where are you thinking of
well,
living?
Well, don't tell anyone, but I'm going to be living at my parents' council
yeah,
flat
you are.
For the first few months.
It's unbelievable.
I know, but luckily I grew up right by the BT Tower. So
really? No
yeah,
one is there.
I know, that's what everyone used to tell me, but they do. But we do. So it'll be fun. My mum and dad mostly live in West Africa, so I'll get to go and not kill my mom the whole time because she'll be gone yeah. when as soon as it gets cold. So
and you'll never be late for anything if you live there.
You'd be surprised.
You'd somehow be surprised. She'll manage.
Somehow she'll manage. They were everybody was scared I was going to be late to this interview. So there you go. I mean, what is it like? I always dreamed of being able to raise my kids in the neighborhood that I grew up in, just because I really loved, I don't know, something about that. What is it like raising your kids in the neighborhood that you were born in?
It's good. I mean, it's not just me, right? So I have another half who would like to raise his kids in the neighborhood he was born in, which is rural Ireland. So
wow,
that causes a certain amount of tension on a daily basis. It's not anything like where he grew up, you know. It's good, but I'm probably too aware of like both the pitfalls and the blessings of a neighborhood. So kids just want to live their own lives. You know, they don't want to hear old heads saying, don't do this, don't do that. Boring to them. So for me, it's a pleasure a lot of the time, but I think it's complicated for us as a family sometimes.
I wanted to ask you, what was your first memory of writing fiction?
Plagiarism. There was some Michael Rosen poem, I think it was, which I just copied down exactly, took it down to my parents and said, I wrote this. And then I got a whooping.
As you should do.
Yeah. And then weirdly later, the first literary prize I ever won, I was about 10.
Wow.
And Michael Rosen gave us the award. And yeah, I felt bad. I didn't tell him. I started by stealing his work. Yeah.
What was the first fictional character you created? What was, do you remember?
I think it was that. It was with my friend Polly. We did it was actually quite plagiaristic as well. It was like a story of two skeletons. So I think it was probably Nick from, is it Alan Alberg and his wife? They did those, it's from the 80s, like an 80s kids book. So we slightly copied it and then won this book prize. So the first thing I ever, character was a skeleton, a dead person.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
Zadie, there was a great podcast interview you did where you were talking about what you were like as a young kid and how you sort of hid behind glasses. And I was wondering if it's interesting to see your own kids growing up in the same place. I mean, what is different for them now? And do you sort of see any repeats of what you experienced?
No, not really. They're so different from me. I don't want to talk about my kids too much, but they're so physically different from me. I was so awkward. I thought I was so ugly. And my kids, they're like all stars or whatever. So I find it quite hard to relate to that experience of not being a freak. My kids are not freaks. So they're a completely different experience. Like my son likes to play football and has loads of friends. My daughter's like tall and elegant and blah, 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 blah. I wasn't any of those things when I was a kid.
I loved hearing about the way you described yourself, looking like, dressing like Virginia Woolf.
yeah, sometimes like Salt and Pepper. It was a bit schizophrenic, but I just had a lot of trouble with the whole realm of, getting dressed and stuff. It just wasn't my thing when I was a kid.
When did you really hit your? I always, I don't know the before times, but I always think of you as incredibly stylish. And I remember being at the Met, seeing you come up the stairs and you have such a style signature with your head wrap specifically. Tell me a bit about sort of styling yourself and when you started to enjoy clothes.
I always was interested. I just wasn't very good at it. But I remember when I went for my college interview, I was very nervous. My mum was very nervous. We didn't really know anything about Cambridge or what you were meant to do. And so her idea was, well, you should get dressed up like an African queen. She put me in this insane outfit with like a cape and this big head wrap. And it was quite busty, I remember, and it was just insane. And then I got on the train and it was just a load of public school boys in their uniforms. Oh, and they God. Just literally looked at me like, what the... What are you doing? I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh God, what have I done? And I got there and it was fine, actually. The outfit was the least of my problems, on that day. But I think maybe that's where it started with the head wrap. My mum maybe I was having a hair panic and she's just like, you can just do this. It's quick.
Do you have a drawer full of them? Do you collect them?
No, I don't have enough. I have like three or four, but I wear my hair out a lot more now. And, sometimes it can give you a headache, a head wrap, depending on how tight it is. So, but I guess when I was young, I used to wear it so that if I was in public doing something public, I would wear it. So when I wasn't wearing it, nobody recognized me. So it was an easy thing. It was just a way of disappearing when I was in my normal life.
I loved hearing about your mother and your hair, because I know your mother obviously has dreads.
Yes.
And yeah, talk to me about your relationship to your hair, because I struggled. I got teased about my hair because I didn't relax my hair.
I mean, I remember it was a whole torturous scene, but it's so long ago and I have such different feelings now that it's hard to relate to the incredible drama that seemed to be around it when I was a kid. I just don't feel any of it anymore. So it's so irrelevant. But when I was young, I do remember if you combed it out big and you felt really confident, you got out the door and you're like, yeah, I look amazing. Within 2 minutes, someone would say to you, what's wrong with your hair? Or what, every time. And you'd be like, oh, okay, right. Well, I thought I'd just try and wear it as it actually is, but apparently not. And that went on for, so many years. It was so annoying.
What designers are you enjoying wearing right now? Have you watched London Fashion Week at all or been to anything?
I've never understood where fashion weeks happen. I turn up in a town, they seem to be happening. they're not on telly, and then they're over. It's like, what, that's it? What happened? I literally don't understand what they are. I've been to one show, I think, the Prada show in New York once that was invited, and it was in 2.5 minutes, it was over. I was like, okay, this is a weird cultural experience. The only one that I know anything about is Rachel Comey, because hers are more like dinners and...
I saw you at a show. Like, yeah, I saw you at a show.
Yeah, I've done.
And it was in Brooklyn in Red Hook.
That was Rachel, yeah.
Yeah.
That
Rachel's show was more of a, I suppose.
It's more of a thing. Yeah. It took more than 2 minutes. You could talk to people, have dinner, have a drink. And then there are some people walking around in clothes, but it's not like the whole thing. Fashion shows are not really, they're not really for me. I went to the Loewe one because Jonathan Anderson is a Northern Irish boy, and my husband's a Northern Irish boy, and their fathers were good friends. And,
oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. And Nick's father had died, and I was quite keen. He was quite keen to meet Jonathan's father. It was lovely, actually, to meet his family. But as a rule, it's just not a thing that I enjoy, unfortunately. But I like the clothes. Yeah, I do like the clothes. And I love Rachel's clothes above all.
Can you buy them in London, or do you have to stock up when you're in the US?
Order them sometimes. I go to New York, or in New York, used to wait for the Rachel Comey sale, which is like a violent bun fight of downtown women punching each other in the face for cheap Rachel Comey. Sometimes, like Amelia Wickstead gave me some things to wear on this tour, which are very lovely. I haven't worn them that much. I'm sorry, Amelia, because it's so hot everywhere, and they're like beautiful autumn clothes. They're so
gorgeous. they're made for British weather. They're not made for...
and it's just been so hot, but. I like clothes, but I guess I prefer to just kind of get my own. And high street stuff, I always, when I was younger anyway, I thought a gift for making very cheap clothes look expensive.
Where did you shop?
Just a normal Zara, Topshop, H&M. Most of the things I went to in New York, I'm wearing high street stuff with like vintage jewelry and sometimes a fancy shoe, but it wasn't expensive.
Zadie, how do people dress differently in London versus New York?
It's just so different. I can't. When I'm in New York, I'm in like costume. I can wear literally anything. You can wear any the most insane. Like this time in New York, I wore like a huge outsized white David Byrne suit. I've worn. It doesn't matter what you wear and in what context. There's always somebody more fabulous. You can't be overdressed in New York. I don't think it's impossible. In Manhattan, I'm not talking about Brooklyn. Brooklyn is a whole other thing. But in Manhattan, it's not, it's just not possible. Whereas in London, literally any attempt at dressing up will be greeted with, oh, look at you. Oh, going somewhere. And it's just, I don't bother. I just wear leggings and a t-shirt everywhere I go. I can't be bothered with it. It's ridiculous. So... yeah, London, I guess it gets dressed up for a big night, but not for any other purpose. Not in my neighbourhood, anyway.
How do you think parenthood has changed how you write?
I mean, I would never want to overstate it, because some of the greatest women writers who've ever lived didn't have children, so it's definitely not a prerequisite. But for me, it's just more experience, more information, more data. I just feel different things, and they're just enriching. I mean, it's just massively, massively enriching. There's things I couldn't have imagined. But you can be a perfectly great writer without imagining those things. Like some of these things are, you probably don't want to know if you want to be a particular kind of writer. Like children make you feel sympathy for your parents in a way that's super annoying. You know, if you want to write a novel like Gwendolyn Riley, you don't want to feel sympathy for your parents. You want to hate them forever. So it's an incapacitating thing at a certain level, but it just makes for different kinds of novels.
The Run-Through will be back in just a moment.
Hi. Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty.
On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier,
and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money.
Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. And we're back. How do you feel when you finish a novel? Is there like a postpartum, or is it a relief, a joy?
It depends. This time it was a joy. I loved writing it, but there was a lot of sadness in finishing it because I just really couldn't have had more fun or been more stimulated by something. I'm sure I'll go on to write other novels, but I don't imagine I'll ever write anything which was so engaging to me. And so took so much and just was so beautifully distracting.
I was sort of amazed listening that you sort of treated this like a Dickensian. You would send it out to friends every few weeks, parts of it.
Yeah. All of it. Yeah. Just like that.
Is it a certain tight group of friends you send it to?
It's just two people. It was just Devorah Baum and Daryl Pinkney in New York. So one in London and one in New York, just two people who have influenced my thinking a lot about so many things and the ideas in the book come from them, and I just knew that they would be interested. Yeah.
And did that just sort of help you get through it, or did they give you feedback that really altered the direction of the book?
And part of it is, you know, a bit of bravado, you know, like I just wanted to see, can I do it? Maybe if you read it, you think, no, you really can't do it. You should never do that again. But I wanted to see if I could do it. This is the way all novels used to be written, and I'm a novelist, so I want to see if I could do it. And no, you have examples in hip hop. You have people who sit down and write every verse perfectly. And then you have Nicki Minaj, Jay-Z, people who just, you know, they will go into a studio and record something absolutely extraordinary. So it depends. Like, you don't always need that excessive preparation. Sometimes by the seat of your pants is a good thing.
I watched The Wife of Willesden and loved it. Went to see it in Brooklyn. And there were some historic, there was a lot of historic references there too, and drawing from Chaucer. And when did you start writing the play? Were you interested in historic themes? I'm sort of interested to know a bit about how these two are connected. Because I think that was the last book I'd read. You know, I saw your play, then I read the book and I was like, oh, okay. Like, there are some common themes here.
I think the history of Jamaica always interests me, but I've started to think of it as just like an act of resistance. Like, I feel like I'm caught in a culture that wants you to only ever think about what happened yesterday at best, and in a constant loop of like presenteeism, and wants you to forget the past. And when you remove people from their past, you remove them from the opportunity to learn from it and to use tools from it. So, you know, when I was young, I used to think of looking backwards as necessarily conservative. And now I think of it as, an act of resistance. It really matters to me, the connection between the past and the present. And there are things there to admire, to pick up yourself as tools. Queen Nanny, obviously, is a great hero of Jamaica, a great hero of mine. And I don't want to leave these things in the past. I think they're they have lessons for us.
Zadie, I heard that you said that after this book, you wanted to just sort of sleep for a little bit and take some time off. And you just told us that you can't imagine doing another undertaking like this anytime soon. But what does that mean? What do you fill your time with when you're not writing?
I mean, I'm not in any lack of things to do. I have a family and that takes up every second of my life, to be honest. The question is, how do I do any writing? It's more to the point. That is more than enough to be getting on with. And then I have given up teaching. So in that gap, I hope to write more essays and just be in the world more, just experience things. But I don't feel I have a moment free. I'm writing a TV show. There's that too.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
I'd love to read in your piece on Deanna Lawson because I'm a huge fan of her work.
Oh, and yeah,
I
think she's so wonderful.
Reading your description of seeing her photographs just really, it just nailed it. Tell me what you're looking at now that gives you that same feeling. Has there been a show or an artist or a thing that you've seen that moved you like that? Because I was like, wow, like this is exactly what it is to be at a Deanna Lawson show.
I'm actually reading, I just finished reading a book called Blessings by a very young Nigerian queer writer. It's a beautiful book. His last name is Ibe. It's coming out, I think, next year. But on the front of that book, there appears to be a portrait. I think he's a Nigerian artist. I'm trying to kind of track him down.
Oh, wow.
That's what's been interesting me most. Hmm. It's not unlike Toye Nodutola's work, but
I love it.
As in the skin is like a map. It's very interesting. But so that's kind of been striking me. I've been so deep in this book that I haven't really, stepped out, been to a gallery. This is what this period is for in my mind. Once a book is over and once touring for a book is over, then suddenly I'm like free to see things and listen to things and read things and like just be a citizen. I can't wait.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Are there things that you miss about... I'm kind of anticipating missing New York a bit after I think it gets under your skin. What do you miss about New York? Anything or?
Everything. I miss everything about New York.
It's the best place.
It is the best place. And so that's very hard. I'm not one of those people who's like, I'm over New York. That is not the situation. I was taken kicking and screaming. And I hope to be back, one day when my kids are older and are doing their own thing.
Mm. And what... I mean, there are great things about London. I'm trying to get excited. What is the best thing about being back home?
It's real life. I mean, I love Manhattan, but Manhattan is not, it's a fantasy. It's like stepping into a TV show. It is absolutely in no form reality. And I'm quite a sucker for fantasy. So I enjoyed it greatly. But London's nothing like that. So London is just a real place. And that's incredible in a lot of ways. Yeah, people don't use the word dream as they do in New York. Every other word in New York is dream. People having dreams, they're going to get their dreams. A dream. It's like it's built on. It's an absolute factory of utter fantasy. So London's not like that at all. You have less conversations, but the ones you have are real and much longer. In London, someone will say to you, do you want to have dinner on the 24th of March? And you're like, that's 3 weeks away. Okay, sure. Whereas in New York, at midday, you're like, I'll see you at 2, I'll see you at 4. We'll have drinks at 5 and go to a party at 6. Another party at 10. And then I'll be in Brooklyn at after midnight.
You can yes, pack come it all to your dinner in, though. You in can't do that in weeks. London. It's too spread out.
No, no, it's impossible. So that's why you'll be having dinner in three
Is it
weeks.
Physically impossible or people physically, just don't physically have the mentality?
Physically impossible.
Physically impossible. Okay. In fact, in New York it is too, but the grid system gives you this illusion that you're going to have brunch,
just 10
lunch,
blocks away.
Dinner, cocktail, blah, 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 blah. You're going to do two of those things. So,
what are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading Trollope. I picked up this bizarre little book by Trollope called The Warden, which is
I had
fantastic.
A Trollope phase during the pandemic. It's I thought actually, it was very buoying.
Yeah, he's very cheering.
A dollop of Trollope.
Yeah, a very dark book called The Atlas of AI, which is incredible and terrifying. Yeah.
And what are you watching right now? What are you watching on television?
I think I'm slightly out of loop, but there's nothing. I did the hate, the kind of love hate watching of the Sex and the City thing, such a massively traumatizing and also insanely enjoyable experience. And then I don't know what I'm doing now. Nothing.
Did
much.
You watch Sex and the City in the original in real time?
Sarah Jessica Parker, I stan forever. I would watch her in anything, in any circumstance, in any show. She is an absolute extraordinary TV actress. One of the best there's ever been. End of story.
Who's your favorite new character on the...
I was just going to ask that.
No, I'm still going to go with Carrie. Sorry. Sticking with Carrie.
Well, we're going to see where she ends up in season 3. I can't believe that there's another one.
Yeah, amazing. Always, always Carrie. Forever. Yeah.
Well, I think we have a quick lightning round for you.
And then
Zadie.
We'll let you go. We know you're on a long...
Yes, exactly. We know you're on a long tour. Well, big fan of your red lipstick. Can you tell us what is the colour? What's the brand? We must know.
It's NARS. It's just a series of different... I don't know that much about makeup, I'm afraid, but it's a bright red one, a dark, moody one, and a light pink one.
Okay, where's your favourite place to shop if you can shop in a brick and mortar place?
I hate shopping.
Okay.
Do you?
I really hate, I do it very quickly. I walk in, I see exactly what I know would look good on my body, I buy it, I'm gone. I don't experience it as a pleasurable activity.
So you go with a to-do list, I need pants and skirts and
it's very
I'm
precise. Yeah, I know exactly, it's more like dressing a character. Like I know I want to look intimidating or it's usually just that actually. And just go into a shop, find something very intimidating, put it on and then go. I don't enjoy the talk with the shop girl. I don't enjoy the staring in the... It makes me feel anxious. So
what's an internet pastime that you wish you spent less time on? Is it Daily Mail, shopping, Instagram?
Oh, for sure. I mean, but Daily Mail only when you're in your lowest moment. It gets you at that moment. You're like, oh, and now I'll just go to the sidebar. Yeah. That I experience worse than if I was watching the most abusive porn. I feel better about anything but the Daily Mail sidebar. That is something that really I hate about myself whenever I go there. Googling yourself, that's the worst, most pitiful thing you can do. What else? Sometimes I go into, I don't hate this though, like the relationships, rap feuds or feuds between. I can get into that kind of thing. Like,
oh, me too. I mean, the Megan Thee Stallion and the Tony, like, yeah, that
I can go
thing
quite
got me
deep down
into that.
Details. anyway, things like that, I can just, and suddenly it's 2 a.m. why am I so concerned with these?
Because we were going to ask you your guilty pleasure, but I guess
that is probably it. Yeah. And sometimes of very new rappers that I don't even know. I might not even know their music. I don't know why I'm into the nitty gritty of their interpersonal feuds. It's strange. Yeah.
All right. Well, Zadie, we'll let you go, but thank you so, so much. It was such a treat for us this summer to read the book and to be thinking
thank
about
you.
This.
Congratulations.
I'm so glad that you've read it. Thank you. It's lovely.
No, it was great.
All right.
Bye,
Zadie.
Take care.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode. We'll be back next week. See you soon.
Bye. The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye. Hi everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in? From PRX.